Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today's Tuesday, September 8th. We're back from a long, long weekend. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Sam.
Nice to see you again.
Nice seeing you, too.
It seems like it's been a while, right?
It has.
Almost a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Very cool. So, how you doing? You had a nice weekend?
I had the best weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm really happy for you.
Thanks.
Yeah. My weekend started with wrecking my car, actually.
Oh, no. How'd you do that?
I was at a gas station, put in the gas, and as I turn on my car, I'm starting to move. Suddenly, bam, I hit a little post and dented the fender. And, you know, that would have been fine, but I totally screwed up the alignment on the wheels. I may have screwed up the suspension and everything because the car started going riding funny. And I took it to the body shop and everything, and it's pretty serious. And, I mean, the thing is that I was barely moving. You know, I just started moving, and bam. So that was pretty disappointing.
That is disappointing.
Like that. But thankfully, I left it at the body shop, and it'll be ready in a few days, so I'm okay with that now. I was pretty pissed at myself, but, you know, it's like these things happen, you know. You just don't see it. It was on my blind side.
Yeah, that's the worst, because then you feel like it could have been avoided, and you're
right.
Like, I did it.
You feel like an a-hole, you know.
Right. You're mad at yourself because you're like, I did it. I'm the one who did that.
Exactly. I
Damn
can't
me.
Blame anybody.
Right.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's good because as long as it doesn't involve another driver, I guess I'm okay.
Yeah, you know? True.
Could have been worse. So anyway, so that's that. So you went back east.
I did.
And for a wedding, right?
Right. My cousin's wedding.
Right. Were there a lot of people there?
There were, I think, about 58 people at the wedding.
Oh, that's nice. So it's not too big, but
no,
it's nice
small.
And cozy.
Yeah.
Wow. Very nice. Did they hold it outside like people do?
Yes. So it was at an estate. I guess we'll call it an estate because it was quite large. In Bar Harbor, Maine. Mm-hmm. My cousin's mom's husband's house. So I guess his stepdad's house. Okay. And it was on the water on a place called Soames Sound. And it was just beautiful. The shuttles took us there and the wedding reception was out. I mean, the actual ceremony was outside overlooking the water. Then we went upstairs into the house for like cocktail hour, went inside to listen to some jazz and eat and catch up with everyone. Then we went outside beyond that to, I guess, the driveway. They sort of set up like where the reception tent was. And it was two long tables. Everyone sat family style. We danced. We drank a lot. My family knows how to get down. We are a really good time.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where like, we just like started like picking each other up. My cousin pushed my uncle. My uncle fell into a bush and split his pants. Glasses went flying. Then the party was over. We like raided the bar. Each person took their own bottle of alcohol. We piled into the shuttles, went to the town and went out there. Everyone was still in their wedding outfits.
Wow. How cool, man.
Yeah. The bride was still in her dress and people were just looking at us like we were a bunch of crazy people. It was so much fun.
Wow. Cool.
I saw a lot of people from high school. Well, not a lot of people, but my cousin's best friends were people I also grew up with. So it was nice to see them because my cousins were each a year apart. So we're all really close. So
yeah.
It was a lot of like fun and very close. Everyone spent a lot of time together. So it was nice.
Cool.
Ate a lot of lobster.
A lot of lobster?
Yeah.
Wow. Never eaten lobster before, but if you say it's good, I believe you.
I had it for
Everybody
breakfast, lunch,
great.
And dinner.
Really?
Lobster rolls for
I
lunch.
I gotta try it.
Lobster for dinner. Lobster omelets for breakfast, and then start it all over again.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow, lobster omelet.
Yeah. I'm having, like, withdrawals from people and from lobster right now. Yeah.
Wow.
You can see a lot of the photos on Facebook and on my Instagram page if you'd like to see them.
Okay, we'll look
I'm surprised you didn't see all the ones my mom posted.
Let's see. I wasn't on Facebook that much. I posted a couple things, but I didn't really surf that much the past couple days, I think.
Well.
So, you know, we were doing barbecues and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's nice. So you did barbecues with your family?
With the family and stuff. And, yeah, it was pretty nice. It was a nice, relaxing weekend.
Good.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, cool. I'm really happy for you. Now, your cousins from here, do they go too? Or is that like a different side of
the
family?
No, that's the family.
It is the family. Yeah. Okay. So you all went.
Right.
Oh, cool.
So I got to hang out with all my cousins that are like my best friends.
How cool is that, man?
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I know.
Somebody was like comparing us to the Kardashians because they're like, your family is large and very close and you love each other so much. It's like annoying. One person was like, nobody loves the Sangermans like the Sangermans. So my dad's mom is a Sanger or was a Sangerman. So right. I'm part Sangerman. And that's their last name.
I see. Okay. Yeah. But it's still on your dad's side.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that his dad was a Golden, which is why I'm a Golden, but his mom was a Sangerman.
His mom's Sangerman. Wow. Very cool, Jen. Well, we're happy for you.
Thanks.
Nice that you're back in one piece.
Yeah. Very I'm surprised important. I am. After that weekend. I don't think I drank water for like 4 days. All we did was drink alcohol and eat lobster.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm having withdrawals, though, from them. So I'm, like, sad to be back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because you sort of got used to being around them for a few days.
Yeah, and it's just, like, you're not in reality. Because also at a wedding, like, they transport you everywhere. Everything's paid for. Like, you just show up. Right. And so you're living in this bubble, this, like, fairy tale bubble. And then you leave, and you're like, oh, I have to drive myself. I have to do things.
Yeah, like real life
work out pill, again.
Real life pills by comparison, right?
It does. Yeah. But it's okay. Real life's still pretty good too.
Yeah.
That was just like a dream. So it'll be fine.
A little fantasy, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Well, we have an awesome guest in the studio. We're gonna get to him in a couple of minutes. I guess tomorrow Apple is making an announcement again, and they're saying that the iPhone 6S would not be the most important announcement.
Oh.
And there are some rumors that they're going to release a giant iPad.
I don't know what that means.
I know.
Isn't that called a computer?
No, it's called a large tablet, I think. If it doesn't have a keyboard, like a physical keyboard, they call it a tablet.
But isn't that then also just like a TV screen?
Well, yeah, but we don't know how big it's going to be. You know,
I'm so
giant,
confused.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be 13, 15 inch or something. I don't know.
Right. That to me sounds like the computer monitor.
I know. You know what? And the funny thing is every time Apple comes out with a product, we're like, really? You know, like when they modify the iPhone and stuff like that, sometimes people would go, you know, what is that for? But somehow they always figure out what we want before we know it.
Exactly. Then all of a sudden we need it and we're like, how did we ever live without it?
Right. You know, I mean, I was wondering about their watch and apparently it sells pretty well. So, you know, I don't know. But I'm even curious to see the 6S. We'll see what happens. But, you know, they tie you down with the 2-year deals, so you can't always get the new phone when it comes out.
Right.
But, you know, yeah. And, okay, well, there's a lot of stuff. I think I found a place where I want to go on vacation, and my brother and his family went to Lake Havasu in Arizona, and apparently that's pretty cool there. Have you been?
No.
Yeah, they have like a replica of the London Bridge there.
Weird, why?
Yeah, I know. I don't know why, but there's like the Colorado River there, and there's a lake, Lake Havasu.
I've been to the Colorado River.
Right.
I went for Memorial Day.
Right. But that goes through a lot of different places, right? But apparently there, you know, boats, jet skis, all this stuff. So I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's only a few hours away, and you're getting away to different thing altogether.
So who are you going to go with?
Well, we'll see. I'm starting to round people up, and we'll see what happens.
Do you have an idea of when you're going to go?
Soon.
Awesome.
Yeah. No, I'm at a point where I can actually leave.
Good.
And actually, I have two destinations I'm considering. So we'll
what's
see.
The other one?
Going up north to see my friends.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So I probably will do both.
Great.
Yeah. To get it out of my system.
Maybe. Might as well.
Yeah, I know. So, and that, and finally, I started wearing contact lenses, actually. Not right now, but I decided I'm going to try it because, you know, I love, like, really cool sunglasses, but you can't wear them when you have subscription or prescription glasses.
Right.
And so I started wearing those, and they have, like, dailies. Like, you dispose them every day, and which is cool. You don't have to clean them or anything. It only comes down to $1 a day or something.
Is this so new to you? Bad.
Yeah.
Oh.
Those dailies, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I knew that they have, like, replaceable ones, but I thought you wear them for a few days and then you throw them out.
There's different ones. I have monthlies. Yeah. I can't have dailies because I have an astigmatism.
Oh, okay. Because I do, too. I have astigmatism, too, but somehow it works for me. I don't know.
Well, that's good. I mean, I don't know why. I have probably also just been wearing the same ones for so long that that's what I have.
Right.
I'd probably prefer dailies, though.
Yeah. They're pretty cool. You know, you don't have to clean them. It's like you're done, bam, it's gone. And I also know from experience when I used to have them, and I had, like, permanent ones, you know, not disposable ones. And sometimes, you know, just from all the cleaning and stuff, eventually there would be, like, residue and things on this, and my eyes would get irritated.
That's what happens to me.
Yeah.
That's why I have weird goopy eyes sometimes.
Yeah.
It's gross.
So, but I mean, do you have this problem where you can't see close when you have your contacts on?
No, I can see everything.
You can see everything. You see, mine are just like for short-sightedness, so I can see far perfect. But when I have to look close, I can't see anything. I can't read my phone.
When was the last time you got your eyes checked?
I just did.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, that's how I get the prescription. But no, it's like, that's what happens. They also told me if you get a LASIK, you're going to be able to see well far, but not close. So I need, like, reading glasses just to be able to see things close, which is kind of irritating. So I decided I'm just going to wear them sometimes when I don't need to be near close things, you know.
Okay.
But you see, that's the thing with eyes and stuff. But so that's why I decided I'm probably not going to get the surgery because if it's going to be permanent that I can't see close, I'll go out of my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really want LASIK because I can't see far.
Yeah.
So I would really like to just not have to deal with contacts any day.
I know.
Wake up and be able to see, go to sleep, not have to take out contact lenses.
Right.
And be done with it.
So, and you seldom put glasses on, right? I don't think I've ever
I wear them at night.
Yeah.
Like when I'm going to bed.
Right.
But I'm in the market for new glasses so that I can give my eyes a rest from contacts.
Yeah.
I just haven't found the glasses I want yet.
Yeah, I know. Oh, well, you know, yeah, eyes, man. But I feel good because now I went crazy, ordered like 3 different sunglasses and things like that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see them.
I know. Well, we're going to get to a guest just now who's sitting here patiently. And we're going to be joined by Frank Ezenekwe, right?
Yes, sir.
I remembered it correctly.
Yes.
Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you for coming in.
Sure.
So I read here that you're from somewhere else, but you live in L.A. now.
Sure.
How long have you been in L.A. now?
15 years.
15 years.
That's right. A long time.
Yeah. So you're an Angeleno. I mean,
absolutely.
You're not new or anything.
No, sir.
So where are you originally from? Where did you come here from?
I was born in Nigeria, and I went to college in London for 10 years, and I moved here in 2000.
Oh, really? So you were born in Africa, actually.
Yeah. Nigeria.
Wow.
Nigeria,
yes. Which mm-hmm. is in Africa.
Yes.
Okay.
Biggest, so. Most populous country now.
Right, it is, right?
Yes, sir.
And so what was your childhood there in Nigeria? I'm really curious as far as to how people grow up there.
Right. On KPCC last night, I heard that there are 400 million people in Nigeria right now.
400 million?
Correct.
400 wow. million people.
So yeah, by the year 2050 is going to double.
Really?
So, yeah.
So almost a billion people.
Absolutely. So what's happening, there are three parts of Nigeria. There's north, there's the south. Well, there's the east and the west, really. I grew up I'm from the east. Where my tribe is called Igbo.
Mm-hmm.
And I was born in a state called Ibadan. Your state in Ibadan. It's a city. And we grew up in the east. My dad worked for Shell Petroleum. My sister works for Shell Petroleum. So we grew up in very secluded quarters, you know, mm-hmm. golf lessons, stuff like that.
Really?
Really?
So, yeah, sure. I learned how to play golf at 13. Wow.
So you feel you had a privileged childhood?
It was.
Like relative to other kids?
Sure, sure. Because my parents worked really hard. They worked for the oil and gas sector.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, I think that if you were anywhere near the oil industry,
sure, sure.
You're in a good
pretty
place.
Well,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Wow, very cool.
Sure.
So you had a nice childhood, and then... So obviously you ended up in college, you said.
Yes, yes.
You moved to London?
To the UK, Birmingham, actually.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And what made you decide to move? I mean, did you feel you were confined where you were? Did you feel that you couldn't really...
It was like a round-and-round chase because my dad wanted me to be an engineer, and he's a mechanic engineer for Shell.
Really?
And all his brothers are engineers. My sister's an engineer, and... You know, I was a creative guy, you know.
Yeah.
Nigeria wasn't ready, so I had to go. I studied architecture for 1 year in college.
Architecture.
And then I moved to graphics and design. It was just more expansive.
Right.
And so, and after that, I decided I wanted to do film. So I was looking at L.A. So I was always one step ahead.
Yeah.
So I knew I had to be in L.A.
Yeah.
So,
so what did you study in college?
I studied graphic design.
Oh,
yes. It was
okay.
Called visual communication at the time. We used a small Mac, you know, the very early Macintosh.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
You know, so.
That was cool, right? Because
super
you
cool.
You got to actually explore and move forward with the technology.
Sure, absolutely.
I know I was doing graphic design and animation
right.
when these things were starting out in
absolutely.
The early 90s
yeah.
and stuff.
Yeah, as Steve was creating them, we were moving with it.
Right, yeah. Very cool. So what college did you go to?
I went to Wolverhampton University.
Which one?
Wolverhampton University.
Oh, okay.
They have a football soccer team called Wolverhampton Wanderers. Mm. They're very popular, just like you know,
really?
Man United.
Yeah.
Man, so.
Shows you how much I know about the UK, right?
But, me too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Very cool. So you started graphic design.
Yes.
You started with architecture, though. I mean, do you still have a desire to do that?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah.
I mean, now we're still, you know, I've done a few things in L.A. with it, you know.
Really?
Yeah, built some things, and the city asked me to knock it down, you know.
Cool.
But, yeah, we're pushing the green envelope, you know.
So. Yeah. Now, after college, did you come here directly, or did you start developing a career back
in
Europe? Oh,
no, I worked for a grocery store called Tesco
uh-huh.
in the UK while I was in school.
Right.
And when I got my degree in design, I wanted to get into film of some kind. I didn't know how, but I knew I liked films and scripts, and I was following all the great directors from... You know, and also all the great theater teachers like Stanislavski,
uh-huh.
Lee Strasberg. I was watching Ilya Kazan. I was paying attention to
right.
all the things, you know, everything about James Dean and Lauren Brown. I was attracted to that screen.
Yeah.
And so I started to write.
Yeah.
You know, so I took a year out.
When you were growing up, did you see a lot of movies and stuff too?
Yeah. Well, two sectors in Nigeria. My dad brought back home. He brought a film called Shaft.
Uh-huh.
America.
We remember that.
So
one.
Yeah, it was a Betamax, you know, it was heavy. You know, so,
wow.
So that was my first.
Like, that was a long time ago.
I mean, it was King and I.
What is Betamax?
Oh, wow. Okay. So
I'm from the VHS
no, no, that's
generation.
Okay, but I have to remember sometimes.
Yeah.
Take
yeah.
a day.
Yeah. Betamax is, do you remember VHS?
Yeah.
Okay. That was the competing format by Sony. VHS came out by JVC, I believe.
Sure.
But Sony was the first one with Betamax. It was a smaller tape, shorter running, and they were both competing. And then the VHS one won because it was longer. You could play longer.
Got it.
So somehow people... But that was like in the 80s, you know?
Right.
Well, I'm an 80s baby.
Yeah. Sure. But that was early 80s. So.
80, 81, yeah. 82. Right.
Before my time.
Right.
But now you know.
Now
I
mean,
if
I know.
You go on a trivia game, you'll know what Betamax.
Right, exactly.
Right, right.
Thank you for that. I hope I win.
Right,
no
right.
problem.
Right.
Good. It makes me feel so old sometimes.
But look how educated you are.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, I mean, you see the world going through so much transition. I mean, I look at my dad. He's 82. And I'm thinking, God, he's seen the world from, like, poverty and nothing, really,
right.
to, you know, from the 30s. Until now, you know, and it's like you imagine how much the world has changed in our lifetime. Imagine in the past 80
right.
years,
right.
you know. So, I mean, that was like World War II generation.
Sure.
I mean, my God, you know, so that's going back a long time ago.
Right.
So very cool. Now, did any of your family move also outside of Nigeria, or did they all stay there?
No, they visit. My dad just, you know, he comes on vacation, but he just feels like we're suffering out here.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't stay in 2 weeks.
Right. So. But you said your sister, did she leave Nigeria?
Or no, she lives in
Nigeria. She lives there.
She works for Shell in Nigeria.
I see. So you're the only one who felt, I need to get out of here and
I need to
see
something.
the big world.
Right. The people I want to compete with are here.
Yeah.
Gotta be here.
Yeah, you gotta
So
be
you
here.
Started writing.
Yeah, and then I wrote a film called Snowflake and Hustle. And it was a lot small love story like Love Jones, you know. And I sent it out to Hollywood. Nobody responded. And like towards the end of the century, like around 99, I got a friend of mine who were like, "Listen, we need to be in L.A.
Yeah.
Millennium. This is where the party's gonna be." So you know, some of them chickened out, you know. But I flew out.
Uh-huh.
I flew out. I landed. I knew it was me, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I was born on the West Coast of Nigeria, you know, and. You know, now I'm in the West Coast, California.
It's
so
similar.
I can't leave the West. So I just knew that there's something about the temperature and the feel of it.
Yeah.
I tried New York and Texas. And
oh, you did try other places
first. In 95, I took like a recon trip.
Uh-huh.
I came out and checked out the States.
Whoa.
Went to four cities and flew back to London. So I took my reports back to the boys, and we decided L.A. was going to be the one.
Yeah. Oh, so you moved with friends here, but
no,
not everyone.
They didn't move. We all planned to move, but I was the one.
You're the only one who ended up.
Right, right.
Wow, you see, so you got that drive to
yeah.
to move to different places and
Absolutely,
stuff and
yeah.
explore.
When I was young, yeah, my parents sent me to China.
Wow.
I was a kid, yeah.
It's amazing. You see, I mean, people can grow up in the same family, and they're so different from each other, you know,
sure,
brothers
sure.
and sisters and, mm-hmm. and so forth. So... So you wrote a film,
yeah,
right?
I wrote several films.
Several
you know,
films?
When I came here, I directed Snowflake and Hustle in 2001.
Oh, so you directed too?
Yeah, I directed.
How did you know how to direct?
I read a book called Rebel Without a Crew by Robert Rodriguez.
Uh-huh.
And he works with Quentin Tarantino. So when I read the book, I knew how to shoot guerrilla style. So, and I followed, you know, people like Spike Lee. I followed what they were doing. And just, you know, Spike Jones. I like people like that. Or Vincent Gallo. People that just did stuff off-grid.
Yeah.
And I learned what the craft was. I knew about storytelling. It was all about storytelling.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Obviously, you make a few mistakes as you're directing, as you teach yourself. But since then, I've done two other films. And, you know, they're out. You can catch them on Amazon.
Really? And what are they called?
The first one is called Brown Skin. And the other one is called The Gates of New York. We actually, those are both romantic films. I like that genre. And we shot Gates of New York in Central Park in New York City.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Are those like full feature films? Or?
Those are feature films. Both
really?
Of them, all my films are feature films.
Wow. So that's like, that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. You need a lot of dedication, a lot of focus. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Did you get like a big crew? Because you said guerrilla style.
Yeah, yeah.
But you must have had some people working with you.
Oh, yeah.
You
got to have. You know, on the back end, I had a lot of post-production crew. But on the front end, we had to dodge and dive and get it done.
Really?
Know? So, yeah, you know, add a lot of production value to it without spending too much.
Yeah.
Now everybody's doing it. When we did it, it was real guerrilla style.
Really?
Now the cameras are here. You know, I have a Sony Alpha now.
Yeah.
And back then, you had to use a Canon XL too, you know, so.
Okay.
And now people have Red, they have compact style, powerful cameras, 4K,
I see.
You know. So.
And so when did that happen? When did you make the film?
I shot this in 2007 and 2009.
Oh, okay.
So those two films are available right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Are you working on anything new as far as film?
There's some stuff I'm working on. I don't know if I should talk about it on the air. But
It's up to you. You know, if it's
right.
too soon, then
right.
yeah,
right.
you can come back and talk about it.
Sure. Yeah. I can give you a title.
Okay.
You know, there's one called Starbucks. That's in Starbucks.
Yeah.
You know, and it's pretty edgy.
Really?
Know? Yeah. And it's pretty edgy, you know. But I like tough films, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
So that. You obviously like Tarantino.
Yeah, I like Tarantino.
Who are some other people that you get inspired from, let's say?
In terms of actors,
right.
I like Denzel Washington, I like Paul Newman.
Right.
I like Ed Harris. I don't know if you know Ed Harris.
Yeah, I love Ed Harris. Yeah.
Where's he been?
Where?
Yeah.
Yeah, good question, right?
Yeah, he directed a film called... he's got a couple of films that I like, but... the ones that he's directed, like the ones that, like, he didn't direct Jackson Pollock film that he did. Right. I think he directed it or maybe produced it. Mm-hmm. But it's most, some of his films are real small, but very impactful, I think.
Right.
As an actor, he's a character actor, but he's, he has a real powerful presence.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, pretty underrated. I mean, I think he's done some great stuff, you know. I don't know how much recognition he got for it, but...
Right. I mean, the people know. The people know the work.
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't need a flyer. You know?
Right.
People know what it is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, what year did you come here to L.A.?
Well, yeah, I came here in 99 first, went back, you know, got my paperwork together, came back again in 2000.
Yeah.
In April, so...
Wow.
So, yeah.
Very cool. So you write books as well, right? I mean, at least you wrote one book or a book series, I see.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. It's called When a Man Looks at a Woman.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's an extension of all the things I've been doing for the past couple of years, from directing, telling stories. It's still the same thing. It's just an extension that's literal in this case. The book really talks about what men see when they look at women. You know, that we have like a few seconds to decide what we're going to do. Are we going to chase her? Are we going to stop and walk away? Are we going to just, you know, simmer in it, you know, and think about what to do with it? You know, so at every stage of a man's life, you kind of know what you want to do with a woman.
Right.
So this book is about knowing that there's three criteria that men use as a filter to look at women. One is their looks. If it's compatible with yours, the personality and their lifestyle.
Right.
My personality you can only get when you actually speak to the person.
Right. And you can't just like do online dating and figure out the personality.
No. We talk about this often.
You do?
Yeah.
Right, nice. So
that's why we invited him over.
Right. So, and then the lifestyle, you know, maybe after dating them for a while, you get to learn about who they are.
Right.
What kind of lifestyle they have? Are they into drugs? Are they, if it's not compatible with yours, then it's not. It's like it's a big chance it's not going to work.
Right.
You know. So those are the three things men look at.
Right. Now, does that apply to women too? Do you feel, or do you guys look at different things?
We definitely look at those things.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know what else to say about that.
No. Okay. Well. Right. No. The thing is, so. So I mean, this can go both ways. I mean, when a man looks at a woman, when a woman looks at a man.
Yeah.
So. So you're saying you need to find out about all these three things before you know if you're going to be compatible with them.
Well, I'm saying that usually men get blamed for just approaching women because we want sex.
Right.
But if we wanted just sex, we could just pay for it in Vegas. Just pay for it somewhere.
Well, this is not necessarily. Right. So some people want sex without having to pay. You know?
Right. So I think we want more than that.
You know?
The act itself is not enough. I think as you get older, you want companionship, you want friendship, you want a backbone support. You want somebody that's there for you.
Right.
And so.
And that's a key thing that you just said. You know, as you get older and more mature, I think you get it out of your system and everything.
Right.
Your priorities change.
Some of it.
Yeah. You know, and then you want to get into monogamy.
And
that because, I don't know. I don't know if we're conditioned for it or whatever it is, but you notice that. People couple up, you know, and even men that you would think this guy wouldn't need anybody, you know, I mean, why is he even with somebody? But, you know, he looks tough or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is everybody needs somebody, you know,
and it's
amazing to me to sometimes see that and see people either that are really in love or people that are not, but they stay together.
Right.
And you figure, you know, I mean, people need each other, you know.
Sure.
People need each other somehow, and it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman or whatever, but people need to have like partners in their lives, I think, you know.
So what inspired you to write this?
You know, a lot of women I know are always asking this very poignant questions like, why am I not married? Why wouldn't he propose to me? Why does he cheat on me? Why wouldn't he commit to me? You know, and these are real questions for some people. And in talking to so many of my friends and having conversations with so many women and men, I realized that although we look at relationships in a very almost blasé way, you know, the way relationships in this century, the way we're looking at relationships now is basically instant gratification. Nobody looks at it from the perspective of longevity.
You know,
nobody looks at it from the perspective of substance. And so I wrote the book because I wanted to learn some things for myself because I'm a student of the game. You know, I'm trying to understand the game too, just like everyone else. I'm not an expert, but I have some very serious questions in this book. And when you can come to the truth, you start to realize at the core of who you are, this is what I can do. This is who I am. I'm a cheater, or I'm a cheat, or whatever you want to say you are. You know, you tell yourself the truth, then you can bring that to the relationship. Why did I write it? Because many people have fallen off, you know, off the relationship stand. I mean, people cannot. Divorce rates are high. Young people are not looking to get married anytime soon. You know, people, you know, guys in their 40s are not even trying to get married.
Yes, I've noticed.
You know what I'm saying? So, and women are asking these questions. They want to know why. What is this man looking at? What does he see in me? Does he want a one-night stand? Is it going to be dates, dinners, and diamond rings? Where are we at?
Ooh, I like those. Dates, you know, dinners, and diamond rings.
Yeah, that's another title I have coming, you know. So, you know. And it's a wide spectrum of things we're working on right now.
Right.
And so, you know, the book is necessary. It's come at the right time because now there has to be some science to the way we look at relationships. We can't just be a shallow or just very simple in the way we look at it. There's a latent structure to it.
Right.
And I think that the more you understand the science of it, the better you can become successful at it. You know, I'm not saying that you're going to be the best because you want to be in one relationship, but you don't want to leave the relationship because she cheats or you cheat. There has to be more to it than that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You can't just leave somebody if they cheat on you?
I think that that's a very 19th century way of doing things.
Really?
Yeah. You have to be aware of the fact that things have changed. People cheat all the time. You know, if you go back to the scriptures with Jesus, you know, if you look at a woman and you lust after her, you've cheated already.
Yeah.
How many times do you do that on Facebook? How many times do you do that on Instagram?
Right. But that's in religion when you're not even allowed to think something.
Exactly.
You know?
That's what I'm saying.
And So, I mean, I can see where things have changed. But you're right. You know, I think in like the olden days and stuff, maybe people did not get divorced as easily because of cheating.
No,
they
didn't rush to that so quickly.
You know, there's some cultures that tolerate that very much, you know. I mean, like the French, I think I was reading, they tolerate cheating. You know, it's almost like part of life for them, you know.
I mean, there's a status that's like an open relationship on Facebook.
Yeah.
Right.
But open relationship is different, right? Because then people know and they agree on it, whereas cheating is...
Well, I feel like that's like a euphemism for saying, like, I know I'm with a cheater.
Right.
So I'm going to just be in an open relationship so it's not called cheating. It's called what we chose to do.
Right, exactly.
Right. You know, I talk about this all the time, you know, in terms of the spectrum, right? Well, every time you start a conversation with a person, sex has begun. It's just not penetrative.
Yeah.
You know, so when you start a conversation with a guy and you like him, you're technically having sex, but you've not penetrated the person. You know, the conversation has begun, right? It might stop as just a hug, but let's not get it twisted. The sex has begun.
Right.
Because you're attracted, you know, some old man told me you're attracted to women for two reasons. Actually, he said, women talk to men for two reasons, money and sex. So I think it's vice versa, too.
Right. It's pretty close, but I think that... I think men use love to get sex and women use sex to get love.
Wow. Yes.
Wow, I never heard that.
Sam, good job.
That's pretty profound. That's pretty profound, Sam.
So, you know, so in other words, we have different priorities, but, you know, we try to accommodate the other person in order to get what we want.
Right. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, accommodate, manipulate, whatever you want to call it. But if we use a tactic to get something we want.
Right.
Yeah,
so we're a bunch of manipulators.
Right, exactly.
A world and full of manipulators.
Men will pretend they don't want to have sex with you and everything. But come on, you know, I mean, even male friends, you know, it's like.
Right.
You know, I mean, many times it could be the other way around, too, you know, where the woman would like to get involved with a friend or something, but a male friend or acquaintance or something.
Right.
But I don't know. I've heard somewhere that in friendships or so-called friendships between men and women, they're saying that usually one side wants to go more than
absolutely.
Just friends.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the truth. Yeah, yeah. They pretend. They pretend. You know,
right.
They pretend like it's not there.
Right.
But there's this passion burning. Yeah. it's burning. And those things are not realistic. I call them platonic relationships. I write about it in my book.
Really?
You know, yeah. Because it's platonic for as far as you want to make it platonic. You know, if you're walking around naked in the house with your platonic friend, how far can you stretch the platonic band, you know? You know, if you're skinny dipping with them, you know, how platonic is that?
Yeah.
If your man or woman was to look at you guys hanging out, would she see platonic or would he see platonic?
Right.
Or would it be pure porn? You know, I mean, it depends on what, you know, so really, you know, that friendship thing doesn't work.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how you look at it,
right?
Right. You know. Wow, very cool. So that's interesting. Now, so when men and women, I mean, the thing is, that I think sometimes I feel like when I see somebody, I feel such strong desire for them.
Absolutely.
If I don't even know them, you know, just on the street and stuff.
That's the line.
And sometimes I think if women only knew, you know, how it can be painful sometimes to see like a beautiful woman
and let it go,
not being able to do anything about it.
Right.
It's like it's our. It's our biology, you know. People don't understand that. I don't know how it looks on the women's side, you know. I mean, I'm trying to picture like when you see a guy, do you already see him married to him and everything? I mean, with a kid.
When we look at them, like I feel like for us, it's like face value. Like we're like, okay, that guy's attractive, or he's not.
Right.
But for us, like we don't like want you until we know you.
Right.
Like we need to connect on some kind of like emotional level.
Right. And that's what creates the conflict between the sexes, you know, because I think essentially or initially we look for different things.
Right.
And, you know, and that's why also sometimes I wonder, you know, because look, all your life you look at the opposite sex and you're attracted to them.
Yes.
Then you meet one person, you settle down with them, and suddenly you're supposed to not be attracted to the opposite sex.
Or not even look.
Right, or not even look. And I think that's not natural, you know. So so that's why I think relationships take a lot of work.
Right.
You know, because somehow you have to meet like on an equal footing, I think, both of you, where you both feel you after the same goals.
Right. I think that's why people say timing is key.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, the work you talked about is the homework.
Right.
The homework is in this book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Because in there, I lay out what exactly he's looking at.
Right.
Because, you see, women feel like they're fooled or they get taken for a ride when a man doesn't complete the journey. Like when he doesn't take her to the altar or commit to a long-term relationship. They feel like they're being played. But if you know what the product is, you know, and I have an MBA, so I teach business. And when you look at the market, when you look at market forces, we talk about four things. We talk about the product, the price, the people, and the place.
Right.
These four things have to come together, right? There has to be a convergence of these things. And so when you look at a woman, when a man is looking at a woman, right, like you said, you're attracted to her.
Right.
Physically.
Right.
If you see the type of woman you like, you're going to say something. You're going to look at her, you're going to smile, you're going to gesture, right? Because you want to acknowledge that she is the type you like.
Mm.
But you might be married, so you can't make the next move, which is get her number.
Right.
So you let it go, and you walk away, and you hurt.
Yeah,
and it hurts.
And you have to let that part of you
that's
die,
called being
you know?
Grown up. That's called being grown up.
Right. No, that's true. But, you know, I say it's like a part of you has to die, you know. You can't be in that state of mind where I'm going to, like, bang everything I see. Like,
every day you're making a killing.
I mean, I honestly now have a new appreciation for what you guys go through. And I'm going to walk around the city feeling bad for all of you.
Right.
Because you're dying inside.
Right.
Every single one of you. And I'm just going to look at men and be like, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Yeah,
and they're going to be like, what? And I'm going to be like, you just lost something inside. I feel bad. I'm going to pray for you.
Or imagine the power you have over that man.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. It's like he'll give anything to be with you type of thing.
Good Lord.
Absolutely. The thirst is real. You know, that's what they say.
But that's what nature does. You know, when you look at animals, it's similar. You know, you know, when they're like during their time and stuff, the mating season or whatever, they go crazy.
They go absolutely crazy.
You know, I mean, look at dogs sometimes. You know, they just start humping everything.
Anything that looks like a dog.
This is just giving me so like this makes me feel like the supreme sex. I'm sorry.
Right. You are.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you.
You are.
Yes,
see, that's
true.
The thing, and that's why many
females
times,
for president.
Yeah, I tell women, I say you have a lot of power, you know, and you have to understand that.
Right.
As you emotional know, as we are, we still have control.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
You guys just run amok.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Right. You can totally manipulate us. You know.
Good. Good to
and
know.
That's what like I think. When you look at like people in the adult industry and stuff, they know that.
Yeah.
You see, when you look at like a stripper and everything, they know how to turn you on because they know what the men want. You know,
absolutely.
And it's
you know, poor things.
I know.
It's tough.
Sad. What a sad lifestyle. But good. We need you guys around. I guess.
But look, I mean, and it's amazing because nature has made sure that we procreate, you know, and had to make us go crazy like this.
Right.
But whatever it takes, you know.
So what's some of the homework in your book?
Right. First of all, the book is split into like 5 parts. Although the paperback comes out on September 30th, the version we have on Amazon now is split into 5 parts. So people can like unpack it in a very simple way. It's a very loaded book, the 333,000 words, you know.
Wow.
The next one I'm writing is called A Gentleman's Playlist, which is much smaller and more direct.
Yeah.
But this one, what's in the book? You have a section that talks about looks. So we talk about different types of looks. What a man sees when he looks at a model. What a man sees when he looks at a voluptuous woman. What a man sees when he looks at a powerful woman. What a man sees when he looks at a lady. What does he see when he looks at his ex? What does he see when he looks at an older woman? You know, because it's not every time you look at a woman that you want sex.
Right.
You know, when I look at Hillary Clinton, I don't want sex.
Right.
You know, what I want is to have a conversation with her. When I look at Oprah, I like her, but I want to listen to her wisdom, you know, and I like her too, you know, but, you know, so every woman you look at, men look at women differently. You know, when you look at, you know, people that are very distinguished, like Condoleezza Rice, obviously you don't want sex with her. You want to talk about world affairs, international policy, you want to discuss things like that, where she can give you some real insight.
Right.
But when you're looking at Tyra Banks, you know, or you're looking at Tahiri or looking at Kim Kardashian, then obviously the conversation is different. You know, you want more animalistic.
That's true.
You know, so the book talks about looks in that way. And in personality, we break down the different types of women's personalities. Some women, you know, have personalities that might clash with yours. But in the book, I'm trying to show women how men reason. So I break down the different personalities of women and the stages there are in their life. So if a girl is 25, for instance, she's partying all the time, you can't push her towards marriage. She's not ready. You know, so you have to know what you're looking at and where they're at in their life.
Right.
You know, so the book talks about that in terms of personality. And it talks about reality. You know, I call that the lifestyle. And it deals with some really important things like domestic violence. And, you know, sometimes women stay in relationships that are really bad for them. And what I say is hashtag tell somebody. Yeah. You know, because tell someone, they might help you. Because when you're in that relationship, you may not see the truth or see a way out.
Yeah.
And so the book deals with some very serious issues as well as some very light issues.
Right.
But altogether, it's just a juxtaposition of a lot of facts.
Right.
You know, a lot of facts that I've gotten from talking to older guys, you know, and, you know, some very simple things like there's not enough D's to handle all the P's in this town.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you have to grow up, you know, and really focus on one. And even if you're not perfect, you can still strive to be something that she needs.
Mm.
You know, I think that men have lost that quality, you know, bringing back that simple quality, you know, of going out, working and looking after your lady and just being truthful.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, and Jen notices that quite a bit, right? Or guys that are not ready yet.
They're definitely not ready, and they're super emotional. Like, get it together. You can be emotional and, like, in touch with your emotions, but, like, the things that I hear or see, like the analyze, like I'll write like, cool, see you later. And they're like, what? You don't want to see me now? What does that mean? Do you really want to see me later? Are you sure you want to see me later? Are you seeing seven other people? What are you doing? I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
What?
I meant I'll see you later. Yeah. That's literally, period.
Yeah, I think that's a Hollywood thing.
I got simple and you got complicated and I don't know what happened.
Right, right. In LA, we're straight. You know, we get it, you know. Yeah, we don't waste any time, you know. We get to it, you know, so there's no emotions there.
No, I feel like me as a female, I'm just like, okay, I'm busy. I write you back. Mm-hmm. I answer your question. And that's all there is to it. But then I have like men in LA that are analyzing whatever I say. And I'm like, really, all I meant was I'll see you later.
Yeah. I need that book.
Wasn't mean like goodbye forever or like this is over. It really meant I'll see you later.
Right.
But what is that? Like, why does that happen?
You know, nowadays, a lot of single homes, you know, where single-parent families where guys are raised by their moms. So you find that guys are taking on a more estrogen-type personalities.
Wow,
you know?
That's
because there's too many women in the house, you know, raising.
Right.
And so you go to a high school, you see guys sitting there on women's laps.
Really?
In my day, you know, the girls sat on us. We knew how to hold those hips. We need to hold them down, you know, hold them tight, you know. You know, you never see a guy sitting on a woman's laps. I mean, you can't do that. First of all, ergonomically, it's not right.
Yeah.
It might hurt her. It makes no sense. No, so there's a lot of soft guys walking around this town, you know, and we need to put a stop to that.
Yeah.
Isn't there somewhere in the middle? Like, there needs to be a middle ground. Like, a dude that's a strong man that's also in touch with his emotions, that, like, wants to be in love and the whole thing, but can still be a man.
Right.
They need to get checked on, you know, because it's getting really soft out here, you know.
Yeah, like I need somebody that can protect me from harm, but also still be like, I love you, you're so pretty, and I'll be like, oh my god, hello, you're a unicorn.
And that's okay, and you don't have to be a softy to say you're pretty, I love you,
right?
Type of thing,
absolutely.
You know,
I
think if anything, you need to be secure in your manliness, to be able to say that, you know, and to express it,
Absolutely.
I totally agree. We're talking to Frank as an Ezenekwe. And that's Frank with a Q at the end, F-R-A-N-Q. You can find out more at frank.com, right?
Right.
And you got a one-word domain, which is awesome.
Yes,
you see, that's
you.
What you get when you have unique names.
Right.
Yeah.
True.
Right.
And the book is When a Man Looks at a Woman?
Yes.
Okay.
When a Man Looks at a Woman. Yeah.
And when... So you said it's going to be... Released when? September
30th.
The 30th.
On paperback.
On paperback. That's cool. Are you looking forward to that?
Sure, I am.
Yeah.
It's been out on Amazon for a while. It's been on Kindle for a while.
On Kindle.
So. I need to read this book.
Yeah.
So is it a book for women or is it a book for everybody?
You know what? It's written for women.
Okay.
You know, to show them how men think when they look at them. So they're not confused.
I've read like Steve Harvey. How do you compare to Steve Harvey's book? Like act like a, what is it? Think like a man, act like a lady.
Think like a man, act like a lady.
Oh,
that one. See, I read it, but I couldn't remember that.
Right. I think his book is more instructive in a sense that it tells you what to do. You know, wait 90 days before you screw a guy. Stuff like that. You know?
See, I've told you, Sam. Yeah. There's the 90-day trial period.
Know, so he has that, you know. And I like the book. I like the movie, too. But, you know, I've read a lot of fluff in this genre. And I wanted to write something real.
Mm.
You know, so the introduction to my book, if you read it, you can see the whole spectrum and of plethora of feelings involved in the way I conceived of the book.
Right.
And I want to unpack it slowly. That's why I split them into three parts. So you're thinking about the looks, the personality, and the lifestyle. I split the book in those three sections.
Right.
So that when you read it, I want it to be porous. I want it to really go into a latent part of yourself. Because it's not something that... It's not a one-day, one-month flavor type book. It's a book that you need to have around. That's why I want to have it on paperback.
Yeah.
Because I realized that on Kindle, yes, you can give it up in little parts, right? But there needs to still be a collection that you can have around.
Right.
So with respect to your question, I think that my book is different because it deals with so many different variables why things don't work.
Right.
You know, so I'm looking at it from a very mathematical perspective, you know, without being too technical, but it's still very lighthearted, you know. You know, when there's a section of every subsection of my book has a wisdom chart, like a small word of wisdom or word of advice. It's all in italics, and that kind of gives you the crux of what I'm saying in each subsection or in each chapter, so that you can take away something.
Right.
So there's a specific takeaway from everything you're reading. You know, as a designer and someone that thinks like an architect, the book is well designed in a way that it visually you can, you know, encapsulate the things you need.
Great. To pick, and to, you know, to me, that's important. I mean, a book has to look good as
right,
well as
right. Reading. Yeah, I want you to pick up the things.
I like organized things. So if my thought, if you organize the thoughts for me, I will then take it in.
Absolutely. That's perfect. How this book is written, yeah.
And then, like, you read it and then, like, okay, key points.
Right, right.
Walk
right.
away with that.
Right, exactly. You know, so.
So when a man looks at a woman, and go to frank.com, that's FRANQ.com. Can find out more information. I'm sure there are links to your social networks
sure.
and everything
yeah,
there as
yeah.
well.
Yes.
So you can find that. You can also Google him. There's quite a bit on you on the
right,
internet
right.
as well.
right.
So
right.
you've been around. Very intelligent man.
Thank you,
very
sir.
Cool, very interesting. So we thank you for joining us.
And thank he brought so gifts. We have a bottle of Tanqueray, London yeah. dry gin, because you went to school in London. Thank
right.
you.
Yeah.
Right. I
appreciate it.
Specifically appreciate that.
Yeah, and you're speaking Jen's language now.
Yeah,
right.
You're
totally.
In a bottle. Yeah.
Right,
and you're
right.
telling me about men. Perfect.
Right.
yeah, there you go.
Good to go.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Thank
of
you for
course,
coming.
Frank. Thank
sure.
you and all the best to you.
Thank
Come
you
back and let us know about...
your films.
Yeah,
right,
your films,
right.
your future books and so
right,
forth.
Right, right, right. Thank
awesome.
You so much.
Thank you. All right, Jen. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.